Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Sunday morning here at Essex Church, where this community of Kensington Unitarians has its spiritual home. We are a community created by all who walk through our doors, and all are welcome to join us. Whoever you are, however you are, you're welcome here in this community that encourages you to be yourself, that accepts you as you are. And if you are a visitor today, we extend a special welcome to you. We'd let you know that you're very welcome to join us after the service for tea or coffee. And if you're one of our regular returning visitors, and a special welcome to you today. It's lovely to see you once again. While to light that candle, but its message is strong. It's in recognition of the inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family. These rights are the foundation of our freedom, justice, and peace in this world. Our chalice flame shines strongly today because people before us have secured freedoms for us. And so might we secure the freedoms of those who are yet to come. Okay, it says here now on the order of service, reflection on asparagus lunches. I think in any organisation there are certain events that are worth getting invited to. And in Unitarian circles, one of the favourites is the asparagus lunch held each year in Evesham. Now, this was apparently originally an annual meeting of ministers at a time when dissenting ministers were not allowed to meet together in any kind of a gathering. It was still illegal. This was back in 1782. So the dissenting ministers in the West Midlands had resolved to meet monthly in order to promote and encourage, and I quote, an earnest and active interest in all matters reflecting religious liberty, particularly in matters affecting equal rights of all denominations before the law. So they disguised their May meeting as an asparagus lunch. Such was the high quality of the asparagus in that part of the country, in Evesham, that it could surely justify ministers travelling from far, far afield to enjoy a good lunch with their friends. Now, by all accounts, this lunch has been held every year since 1782, and these days, not just ministers get to attend. When I went some years ago, I was asked to propose the traditional toast. To civil and religious liberty the world over. And I don't think it was just the effects of a good lunch that had touched me. It was the thought that these same words had been said over the centuries by so many people truly committed to that cause of liberty the world over. Now, the toast is said in many settings. It's not just in the dissenting tradition from which we Unitarians stem. And the words are said to have emerged way back after the so-called Glorious Revolution of 1688 that saw James II deposed by William of Orange and Queen Mary. Their reign heralded a new religious tolerance here in England for most nonconformists, though us Unitarians had to wait till 1813 for our religious faith to become legally allowed. It's interesting to think, isn't it, just how often secret meetings might eventually have led to the winning of liberty for a particular group. It's important to think of the issues that still call for this kind of attention today.
There's just a few extracts from Tony Benn's letters to his grandchildren. Given the injustice that still exists across the world, do you ever ask yourself, why do people put up with it? The answer is that subtle mechanisms are used by established ruling elites to stave off opposition. First, they keep people cowed with the fear of a dangerous enemy. In the first 50 years of the 20th century, the Kaiser's Germany was held up as an enemy, then Hitler. After 1945, Stalin became the enemy, and billions of pounds were spent on weapons of war to prevent a possible Soviet invasion. In the 21st century, new fears have arisen. Islamic fundamentalism is the supposed enemy, and Christian extremists such as President George Bush claimed to have been instructed by God to invade Iraq. Then there is a new anxiety about the possible supremacy of the Chinese as the world's former dominant economy, the American, falls into crisis. And there is fear in the West of immigration, of loss of identity, competition for jobs, shortage of housing. But it is the war on terror that has been most recently and most ruthlessly used to justify a massive erosion of civil liberties. Another mechanism of control is to divide people, setting men against women and women against men, black against white, white against black, native-born against immigrant, and new immigrant against old immigrant, and Christians, Muslims, and Jews against each other. And it tries to conceal the fact that all people of both sexes, all faiths and nationalities, have a common interest in achieving justice. Unity among the poor would pose a grave threat to the rich, and the rich know it. So people are encouraged to think of themselves in specific groupings, which build a sense of identity, but which in fact keep them apart from each other. We are English, or British, or Welsh, or Scottish, or Tutsis, or Hutus, or Catholics, or Shia, or Sunni. A third method of control is achieved through demoralization, by the suggestion that only an intellectual elite has the capacity or the entitlement to play a role in society. The final instrument of control is more subtly exercised, the encouragement of cynicism, which permeates the media. The feeling that the public services are run by incompetence and that members of parliament and ministers are all dishonest and in some way corrupt, a perception which members of parliament's exploitation of the allowances system has gone a long way to confirm. If people had confidence in the democratic process, they would realise its potential and use it to create a fairer and better society for themselves.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. That's what an American friend of mine, a lawyer living in this country, said to me last year. I didn't take him seriously at the time. He was talking about civil liberties here in the UK, and I felt I had the upper hand at that moment in the discussion. I was possibly a bit smug. Terry Jones, the evangelical pastor from Florida, had just burnt a copy of the Quran amidst distress and condemnation from around the world. In the ensuing troubles, a number of American servicemen and women had lost their lives. Now, if somebody announced that they were going to commit a similar act here in the UK, they'd be stopped under the Racial and Religious Hatred Act of 2006. Surely that's a good thing. But my friend thought not. He argued that the increasing numbers of restrictive laws that have been passed by British governments should be seen as a serious potential infringement of our liberty. He pointed out all the issues that I should be considering. One of which was, Sue, you mentioned repealing an act. It is a lot easier, by all accounts, to pass an act than it is to repeal one. Now, do excuse me, I just need to get my lines right here. Apparently, one of the issues that he mentioned about the Racial and Religious Hatred Act was that such legislation has real implications for religious and civil liberty, which for Unitarians have always gone hand in hand. The rights of the individual need to be respected, both in all spheres. But we need to really consider what might be the unexpected consequences. Our chief officer, Derek McCauley, wrote recently about the draft communications bill. And that's the bill that would force internet service providers and mobile phone network providers in Britain to install little black boxes in order to collect and store information on everyone's internet and phone activity. And it would give the police the ability to self-authorise access to this information. Derek McCauley points out that our General Assembly this year passed an emergency resolution deploring this proposed legislation, and putting the point that Unitarians have always been sceptical of the argument that's being used at the moment, that those who don't break the law have nothing to fear, and that's used as a justification for legislation that interferes with the lives of individuals. This, he says, has been a charter for increasing government interference, and it endangers the traditional relationship between the citizen and the state. Religious bodies should think carefully about this legislation. Now, we know, don't we? We have our own concerns about the internet, the concern that it can be used by people of ill will. But listen to these words from Tim Berners-Lee, the Unitarian who helped to create the internet in the first place. He warns that dangerous new laws will lead to the destruction of human rights if they're implemented in their current form. In an interview with The Guardian, Sir Tim said, "The idea that we should routinely record information about people is obviously very dangerous. It means that there will be information around which could be stolen, which can be acquired through corrupt officials or corrupt operators, and could be used, for example, to blackmail people in the government or people in the military. We open ourselves if we store this information to it being abused." He added, "The amount of control you have over somebody if you monitor internet activity is amazing. You get to know every detail, in a way more intimate details about people's lives than any person they might speak to, because often people will confide in the internet as they find their way, for example, through medical websites, or as an adolescent, for example, finds their way through a website about homosexuality, wondering what they are and whether they should talk to people about this." Now, you know the arguments, and you will have heard, no doubt, the Home Secretary, Theresa May, defending these proposals after civil liberties groups and many backbench MPs have been criticising them. Theresa May insisted that suspected terrorists, paedophiles and serious criminals would be targeted by intelligence officials rather than ordinary people. Now, my lawyer friend expressed his concern about the way human rights legal cases are even reported in the more right-wing press here in Britain. A quick look at the Daily Mail's website this week, for example, finds headlines stating that the Human Rights Act is bonkers, and that both our Prime Minister and our Home Secretary would like to abolish this legislation. At our Unitarian General Assembly meetings in Swansea in 2011, our Penal Affairs panel organised a really informative talk on human rights given by a law lecturer. She too warned of a sustained campaign that's going on in this country that she said is being waged against human rights legislation. And she warned of the dangers that come from a press that reports on the occasional negative occurrence or use of this law and ignores the majority of positive and therefore, of course, less newsworthy cases. Yes, we know that new circumstances require us to reflect on legislation. in order to keep law-abiding people safe. But such legislation can be used against us as well, can be used against people who would like to protect our civil liberties. It can also be used by the government to hide its own bad behaviour. I don't know about you, but I'm saddened when I hear that successive governments of this country in which I live have engaged in illegal activities. They've lied, they've condoned torture, they've used force to extract confessions, they have allowed and even encouraged the police forces to behave in racist ways, etc., etc., etc. The list is long. I know it is not easy to rule a country. And I know that governments and the individuals who serve upon them deserve our thanks, they deserve our support. But they also need, I think, the people they govern to be watchful, to pay attention to what is going on, and to speak out when wrong decisions are in danger of being made. They need us to value the freedoms won by those in ages past who dared to meet in secret to plan ways for liberty to be secured. So if I had a glass in my hand right now, I would raise it and I'd propose a toast to civil and religious liberty the world over. For that really is a cause worth championing for those who do not yet enjoy freedom. It's also a cause worth protecting for those like us whose forebears secured our liberties for us. Amen.